Good morning, everybody. It is October 27th, 2021. This is the ADK Homeroom, and I am your host, Frank. Your home away from homeroom, that's what it is. Well, we've had rain the last day in the Adirondacks. Most of the leaves are off the tree now. Getting ready for that Halloween parade. I think the kids are going to have to be wearing the puffy winter down coats underneath their goblin and ghoul costumes, or more likely their Cruella and Outer Banks costumes come this Friday. It is going to be a cold one. And as usual here in the Adirondacks, it's going to be a rainy one. It always rains on Halloween up here. Let's get right into it. We're doing a news roundup. A lot of stuff has been going on. First, a couple of interesting notes on sports. The first American team since 2018 to reach the quarterfinals of League of Legends. The League of Legends World Tournament taking place in Iceland this year because, ironically, even though the Chinese League is one of the best leagues in the world, China has turned against video games and turned against tourists. So the tournament, even though Tencent, which owns the controlling interest in Riot, even though Tencent is a Chinese company, they couldn't host the tournament this year. It was in Iceland. And the first American team to make the quarterfinals since 2018 did lose in the quarterfinals on Monday. That was Cloud9, employing mostly imported talent. They lost on Monday, but they did have an American player, the jungler Blabber, and we'll see where they go next. There are some rumors that Perks wants to play with Alfari, Perks being their mid laner, and Alfari being a top laner who played on another team this year, also a very good team. We will see what happens, but if you're not into esports right, there are two big advantages to esports. Number one, no referee mistakes. And number two, no injuries ruining your favorite team's chances. Well, I shouldn't say that. There are some injuries and health concerns, but hardly the same chance as in the National Football League, for example, where your favorite team's chances can just go up in smoke with, say, a Jabril Peppers knee injury. The Giants were doing terribly before that, but sad for Jabril. Hopefully he will recover quickly. Also in the National Football League, I hope you're paying attention because you are witnessing the performance by Tom Brady into his 40s the last few years that is absolutely remarkable. The National Football League is full of elite athletes, and somehow he is redefining the notion of elite. There really is no one in his class. What he did, leaving the Patriots and then going to the Buccaneers and taking the Buccaneers to the Super Bowl victory last year and then continuing that success this year, just absolutely spectacular performance by Tom Brady. You should pay attention to that if you have any interest in elites and their functioning and how they work. It's just amazing. Also amazing in the National Football League, the Detroit Lions, their consistency. You know, they're owned by the Ford family, Ford Motor Company, and they are completely mismanaged and have been since the Super Bowl era began in the 60s. The Lions did win a championship in the 50s, but not since the Super Bowl era began. In fact, they have won one playoff game in 50 years. One playoff game in the last half century the Lions have won. And of course this year they haven't won a game. Amazing. Truly amazing. They could be 0-17 this year. Fantastic consistency. Poor Detroit fans. They deserve better. And you have to see the parallels between the auto industry and how horrible it has become. And the Ford family owning the Lions and how they won championships back just before the Ford versus Ferrari days. Just before that, they were still winning championships. And now they don't get enough attention as they deserve, frankly, for being as futile, as hopeless as they are. One playoff win in 50 years. And the NFL is built for parity, right? The NFL is built for teams to go up and down. So if the Lions do this, truly amazing. Pro Kabaddi wrapped up season 7 last week. The Bengal Warriors won the championship. If you don't watch Kabaddi, you absolutely should. It is an amazing game. Kabaddi. Look it up. There's no ball, there's no goal. This is the playground game. All you need is your own body and a couple of lines in the sand. That's it. You don't need any other equipment and your voice. And your voice. You have to be able to say kabaddi, 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 kabaddi. It's amazing. It's a sport like no other. Go and look it up. Well, I should say it's a sport like no other professional sport. Go look it up. It is your playground as a professional sport. Nothing but some lines in the sand and your own body. If you do want to hear more about kabaddi, I can explain it to you, but I think we should move on. Let me know in the comments. Let me know on Twitter at ADK Homeroom if you want to know more about Kabaddi. Next up, some physics news. Two pieces of physics, big physics news. Number one, the quicker piece of information. Quick piece of information here from physics. A new extraplanet, as they are calling it, has been discovered. And by they, I mean Miss DiStefano. Roseanne DiStefano from Harvard. She has used data from Chandra and XMM Newton, which are two X-ray telescopes, to find this extraplanet. An extraplanet is a planet in another galaxy. This is the first ever to be confirmed. Well, it hasn't quite been confirmed yet, but if it is confirmed, it'll be the first ever extraplanet. They made up that term. I think the term exoplanet would be just fine for it, or even the term planet, right? The first exoplanets would be planets around stars other than our sun. These, of course, within our galaxy, these were found in the very late 1990s by Geoffrey Marcy and people like that out at San Diego. And they were able to use two main techniques. One technique is to look for the light from the star dimming as the planet goes in front of it. This is called the transit method. The planet crosses in front of its star, and you see the light from the star dip down momentarily. Now, this is very hard to confirm because the exact alignment of this star and then the planet and then our observatories here on planet Earth, that exact alignment is very unlikely and sometimes doesn't occur again. So you can't really go very often, it doesn't occur again. And so you can't really see the transit happen twice in many cases. That's unfortunate. But it does provide a good way to observe exoplanets. Originally, of course, it was very difficult, or it still is very difficult, but it took us until the late 90s to see any exoplanets at all, right? Because you're trying to see a tiny little object going around a spotlight, right? Maybe like a firefly next to a spotlight from a mile away. This is hard to see. The other method that is used to spot exoplanets commonly is the wobble method, the gravitational wobble. Because when the planet orbits its star, it pulls the star slightly, ever so slightly, in the direction of the planet, because the star and the planet are gravitationally attracted to each other. And as they are attracted to each other, the light from the star reaching Earth is shifted. There's a Doppler shift in the light from the star approaching Earth, whether it's pulled towards its planet or whether its planet is lined up one way or another, the star gets pulled toward the planet and that shifts the light waves coming into Earth, and we can detect that. So those two methods are used to discover exoplanets. Those are the main two methods. The transit method is the one in this case. Mr. Stefano, Dr. DiStefano here used the light from a blue supergiant and a dead star, probably a neutron star or a black star, a black hole. Orbiting each other and orbiting their center of mass, I should say, over in the Whirlpool Galaxy, about 23 million light years away. Our galaxy, if you're not aware, is a couple of hundred thousand light years across. It's diffuse, so defining the exact edge is tricky. It's about 100,000 light years or so across, shaped like a swirly pancake, and it's about, 30,000 light years thick. So this one being 23 million light years away, that would be 23,000 light years away. That's a lot farther than just 100,000 light years away. Well, we'll see if that data holds up, but it's exciting if it does hold up. The first planet discovered outside of our galaxy. Most people think, by the way, that galaxies are so far apart from each other that it's for purposes of interstellar travel, eventually, if you're hoping that humans make it off Earth and make it to another star system, most people think that even with interstellar travel capabilities that could be conceived of, or that are conceived of, the other galaxies are too distant. Just forget about them. Most people, when they talk about SETI, they talk about interstellar travel, they are focusing just on our galaxy. Sure, anything's possible. And with SETI in particular, maybe you could see some alien superstructure. Maybe you could see a Dyson sphere or something like that in a distant galaxy. Definitely possible. But in terms of contact and in terms of interstellar travel for the human species, it's all within our galaxy. If you're talking about extra galactic travel, that's really beyond what anybody takes too seriously at the moment, given where we are. So it's interesting, by the way, that Bill Nelson, and we'll get to this later in today, Bill Nelson, the NASA chief, actually did talk about things beyond this galaxy. Interesting that he did it that way. We'll get to Bill Nelson in a second, though. There's one other piece of physics news. And the other piece of physics news, Sabina Hassenfelder has an amazing article up in Cosmos Weekly. Highly recommend it. Hassenfelder, of course, has the Back Reaction blog. Highly recommend that blog, too. And her article is really on the nightmare scenario. Her article from just a couple days ago in Cosmos, in the Cosmos Weekly Bulletin, actually. It's a great summary of where we are. She doesn't use the term nightmare scenario, but that's what it is. That's what physicists in the particle physics community call it, certainly. The nightmare scenario means this. The nightmare scenario means that about 10 years ago, as we were confirming the existence of the Higgs boson at the Large Hadron Collider over in CERN in Switzerland, built by an international consortium of governments, and we spent several billion dollars on that research, we confirmed the Higgs boson, which had been predicted in the 60s, and it's part of the standard model of physics. One of the last pieces, finding the mass of the Higgs boson, was one of the last pieces of the standard model of physics, which had been in place since really the late 60s, early 70s. And finding it was great. It was wonderful. But for a couple of decades, physicists had been assuming that the progress that physics could make would be in particle physics. It was kind of the star field, like the mid lane for League of Legends, or playing, wearing the number 10 on a soccer team, doing research in particle physics, high energy physics. They're really kind of the same thing because you can study particles at high energy. So that was the star field of physics. That was where the coolest physicists were, like, Nima Arcani-Hamed with his fancy long hair and his rock star charisma by physics standards. It doesn't take much to have rock star charisma by physicist standards, let me tell you. Big Bang Theory is not accurate at all. That is not how physicists act, but it is correct that physicists do tend to cluster at one side of the charisma spectrum in the spectrum of humanity's charisma, I guess. Feynman, of course, the poster child for high charisma physicist. What a guy. So anyway, Hassenfelder has this article up in Cosmos, and she summarizes for you that we're in a tough spot because the nightmare scenario has come true. 10 years ago, we confirmed Higgs boson, but these are old predictions, and we found nothing new. Physicists were hoping the stars, the wonderkins of physics, were hoping that we would find signs of supersymmetry, signs of these new particles, these supersymmetric particles. And they would point the way towards a string theory and a theory of everything that would let us unify the four forces, right? Gravity is the main holdout. The four forces in physics are strong force, the weak force, the electromagnetic force, and gravity. And of course, we've got three of them unified, but not gravity, or close to unified, but not gravity. Gravity's the holdout. And of course, gravity is so much weaker than the other ones. It's 10 to the 40th times weaker, right? That is unimaginably weak. 10 to the 40th times weaker than the other ones. So it's much harder to do experiments with gravity than with the other things. If you've never convinced yourself how weak gravity is, people think gravity is strong. No, gravity is extremely weak, extremely weak. You don't know how weak it is? I'll tell you how weak it is. Just take two magnets, hold one of them up, put the other magnet underneath it, and then let the magnet underneath it stick to the one on top. Do they stick? You take two kitchen magnets, do it. Can one kitchen magnet hold up the other magnet? Yeah, sure it can. One kitchen magnet can hold up the other kitchen magnet. And what's it holding it up against? What wants the other kitchen magnet to fall? Gravity. So gravity's pulling it down. Kitchen magnet's pulling it up. Kitchen magnet wins. Okay, big whoop. How does this prove how weak gravity is? Because it takes the entire freaking Earth to get enough gravity to pull that kitchen magnet down. And it still loses to another little tiny magnet that can fit on your pinky. That's how weak gravity is. The entire Earth's gravity can't beat a single kitchen magnet. That's how weak gravity is. So it's hard to do an experiment with gravity, very difficult to get data with, and we're having trouble combining it. It also doesn't hurt that Einstein has this amazing theory of gravity, the general theory, the general relativity theory, and it is completely the opposite of our theory of the other three, four, well, I shouldn't say the opposite, but it's completely separate from the theory that covers our other three forces, strong, weak, and electromagnetic. So we really have no clue how to merge them together. Very strange, very difficult. So that's the nightmare scenario 10 years ago, is that we confirmed the standard model and the Higgs boson, but we did not see any signs of superparticles. We did not see anything pointing the way forward. So what are we to make of this? We have nothing to go on. Our old theories are confirmed, but we have no clues from this supposed star field of physics, the supposed, you know, chosen field, particle physics, that was going to take us forward. It didn't show us any new particles, any new particles. It ruled out, really, supersymmetry, even though people like Gordon Kane are still clinging to hope. Gordon Kane from University of Michigan, by the way. Big game coming up against Michigan State this weekend. Go Blue. So we're in this nightmare scenario of everything that we had is being confirmed, but it doesn't give us any hints about our new mysteries. And there are a lot of mysteries out there. In 1998, we confirmed that the universe is not only expanding from the Big Bang still, but its rate of expansion is increasing. So we proposed this dark energy idea, or we revived Einstein's cosmological constant to explain it, but we really don't understand it. It can mathematically fit into the equation and mathematically account for the expansion, but why is it there? I don't know. Einstein took it out because even though his instincts said to put in this cosmological constant, he didn't know why his instincts were telling him to do that, and so he just yanked it out of there. There was no reason for it to be there. Turns out it does need to be there. And we have no idea why. That's just one mystery. There are other mysteries, at least to the way physicists think, the hierarchy problem and the naturalness problem, right? And plenty of other mysteries out there. And the fundamental one, really, Feynman, of course, said it was the central mystery, the only mystery of quantum mechanics. What does quantum mechanics mean? The double slit experiment, how are we supposed to interpret that? Hassenfelder, in this article, she calls it the measurement problem, which amounts to the same thing. It can be slightly different, but it amounts to the same thing, really. How are we to interpret quantum mechanics? That's really at the root of it. What does quantum mechanics mean? And Hassenfelder points out that finally, physicists are trying to figure this out. After decades of just ignoring it, and she phrases the philosophy as shut up and calculate, which is how a lot of people phrase it, and it's true. A lot of people just said the Copenhagen interpretation is right for quantum mechanics, now shut up and calculate. There was really a de facto policy of turning down any papers at all at PRL and other big physics journals, just turning down any papers at all addressing the fundamental interpretation of quantum mechanics for decades in the 20th century. And that stalled progress tremendously. But now Hassenfelder says over the last 10 years that has weakened because we got nowhere else to go, right? She doesn't actually say that's the reason, but that is the reason. It's the nightmare scenario has come true. We got nowhere else to go. Spent billions of dollars. We're not going to get tens of billions of dollars to develop any more particle accelerators, which may be a good thing because it's turning people back to the foundations of quantum mechanics. They got to publish on something, right? Got to publish on something. And so Hassenfelder points out Frauschinger-Renner is a great paper that questions the foundations of quantum mechanics. She acts like it's a death blow for the traditional interpretations and the Copenhagen interpretation. I'm not sure that it's a death blow. A lot of physicists are still going to be out there arguing that the traditional interpretation of quantum mechanics can go on and that the shut up and calculate, and that's just what it is, and it has no meaning, sort of, is what their argument amounts to. There's still going to be a lot of people arguing for that. But Hassenfelder does a great job of saying, yes, we're in the nightmare scenario, although she doesn't use that word, but hopeful because finally people are looking at the quantum mechanics foundations and asking, what does it actually mean? Quantum mechanics, of course, in this duality of waves and particles, has been around for 100 years, right? Since the 1920s, and nobody has figured out what they mean. Even the great Richard Feynman, even Einstein, who devoted the latter part of his career to trying to work on quantum mechanics. He did the EPR paradox, had locality ideas that, to a large extent, the Bell theorems in the 60s disproved. Of course, my personal view is, I've said this before, is that there's some sort of basic minimum calculation principle or minimum information resolution principle out there in the universe. And the universe only calculates the minimum amount of information necessary to resolve a situation. So if it doesn't need to resolve through which slit an electron travels, or if it doesn't need to resolve what the position of a particle is, or the momentum of a particle, or the result of a collision, then the universe doesn't calculate that. It doesn't bother tracking that information. It only calculates what it must when there is, in the Copenhagen interpretation, what the Copenhagen interpretation would say, when there is a waveform collapse. Only then does the universe get off its arse and actually calculate what happens. But hey, I've never seen a pro physicist talk about that idea of mine, my little hedge physicist idea. If you're not aware, by the way, my undergraduate degree with high honors, by the way, that's how University of Michigan, oh, Gordon Kane's home, oh, Gordon Kane. Anyway. Also home of Fred the Idiot. He's emeritus now. Fred the Idiot. Oh, Fred. Anyway, that's my background in physics. But I did, when I was doing my minimal undergrad research there, it was mostly in nuclear and material science, not QM. Anyway, regardless of all this, excellent Sabine Hassenfelder piece in Cosmos. I recommend going to check it out. Let's round up the rest of the news here. Sweden doing better than Australia in COVID. Cases per day in Australia, about 2,000 per day since October 1st. Sweden, only 600. Now, Australia's population is 2.5 times the Swedish population. So if you sort of normalize that data, you've got 78 cases per million in Australia, 57 cases per million in Sweden. Deaths, it's the same situation. Australia, 15 per day. Sweden, 5 or 6 per day since October 1st. In per capita terms, that's 0.58 per million in Australia and 0.48 per million in Sweden. So that's another prediction correct in this podcast history and in my history. Another prediction correct that Sweden would end up doing better than Australia, and I predict that this will continue to hold true going forward. Very interesting implications of this data for the efficacy of lockdowns and for policy concerning taking away individual rights. Not good, Australia. Naughty, naughty. You're convincing Candace Owens to invade you. And nobody wants Candace Owens invading them. Let's be honest. Nobody wants that, Australia. Get your act together. Or she might just have to do it. Can you imagine? Can you imagine Candace Owens soloing coast to coast, storming up out of the water, got the doughboy hat on, charging in, digging her one-person trench, assaulting Australia? I don't know. I don't know. It's just a funny image. Candace Owens gets a lot right, but invading Australia, have we learned nothing from Afghanistan? Okay, next on the news agenda, of course, yesterday, Pfizer vaccine approved by an FDA advisory panel for ages 5 to 11. CDC will vote on that Tuesday, November 2nd. This is a horrible idea, of course, to push the vaccines on kids. If you want to vaccinate your kid, great, go for it. I'm an adult. I'm vaccinated. I recommend the vaccine for all adults. But we have gone overboard here. We are sacrificing kids for the sake of older people. Literally less dangerous. The COVID disease is, the disease you get from the SARS-CoV-2 virus is literally less dangerous than the flu for kids. For kids. There are fewer deaths in 18 months. There are fewer deaths, or what are we up to now? 20 months, something? Fewer deaths from COVID for kids in 18 months than there have been in many single seasons, just several months long, single seasons of influenza. And when you want to talk about just healthy kids, it's even more outrageously tilted towards the side of the flu being far more dangerous than COVID. It's not even close if you're just talking about healthy kids. So if you are vaccinating your kid, you need to understand that unless you are terrified of the flu, and in that case, you know, join Howie Mandel and his support group. But if you were terrified of the flu, okay. But if you weren't terrified of the flu, for a healthy kid, there is zero, effectively zero reason, no reason at all to be concerned about COVID for kids. The only reason you would be giving them a vaccine, and any vaccine has risks, right? So the only reason you would be giving them a vaccine is for older people, to help older people. And any vaccine has risks. You are introducing new risks. You are introducing new risks without question when you give a kid a vaccine. You're introducing a new risk. So you're vaccinating kids for the sake of older people, and that's just evil and backwards and wrong. It just is. You know who sacrificed kids? Incas, Aztecs. But you know what? I guess we've been learning in school for 30 years that traditional American culture is no better than Incan culture or Aztecan culture. So, hey, you know, why? Why would we be opposed to child sacrifice, I guess? Not that vaccines are tantamount to child sacrifice. They're not. But the idea that you would be hurting your kids to help the older people is along those lines, right? By the way, in the United States, 77% of adults have received at least one dose. 95% of the adults who are at the greatest risk by far, 95% of those over 65 have received at least one dose. Let's keep going through the news. We haven't done a news roundup in a while. There's a lot to talk about here. Next, Bill Nelson, NASA chief, overestimating the UFO chance, right? He made this appearance like a week or two ago, but then it came out at the end of last week. People started noticing it. He has this amazing video where basically Bill Nelson says, Yeah, there's UFOs. There are UFOs out there, and he doesn't say they're probably aliens, but he says they're probably not from Earth. So he can't quite go so far, but he says they're probably not from Earth. You know what the thing is, though? I think he's vastly underestimating the chances that China or Russia or Israel or somewhere has some amazing drone technology that is two generations advanced beyond us. Is it possible that they're aliens? Yeah, I really do think it is. The Tic Tac, and he says that there are hundreds of other incidents similar to the Tic Tac, and he says that there are a couple dozen other incidents that are extremely well documented, like the Tic Tac. Oof, I would love to hear about that. I would love to hear a couple other incidents like the Tic Tac, as well documented as the Tic Tac coming out. That would be great. But I really do think that he, you know, he's saying, well, it's probably not from Earth. And that's what Mitt Romney said last summer, is that this is not pure adversary technology. I think it might be. I think it might be, right? When you get into unknowns and you have to sort of weigh the chances of aliens and you fall back on Occam's razor and you don't want to multiply entities beyond necessity, there's a good chance it could just be pure technology. We haven't seen any other signs of aliens. On the other hand, there's such limited data here, it's really hard to tell. And maybe, you know, if they would release things like the Calvine incident, if we could get people to actually go up and take the Hestelin lights seriously. At least our Avi Loeb has got the Galileo project coming off the ground. This is great. Hopefully we'll get some data where we can actually figure things out. But my main point here is that you would think things like the Chinese hypersonic weapon system test would have taught Bill Nelson a thing or two about being surprised by adversary technology. I don't know. Maybe he's just assuming that that did, or pretending that didn't happen. Who knows? Who knows? But, you know, the problem here in ufology is that you can't trust the data. If you think we have a data problem in epidemiology, if you think we have a reproducibility crisis in social sciences and psych and things like that, yeah, well, those things look like RCTs run by Louis Pasteur and Galileo compared to the data we have in UFO studies. I mean, the government has actively run campaigns to obscure the data and UFO studies. So, ouch, tough situation here. Okay, let's keep going here. Crypto is on a run, right? I just want to point out that it went on a run because the Securities and Exchange Commission in the United States said that they might allow, or they have allowed, at least one ETF, exchange-traded fund, on a Bitcoin futures price, and still not a spot price, but just that slight hint that government might not totally destroy cryptocurrency, just that slight little hint, that tiny little morsel they threw out there, just that caused this huge run in the crypto markets, and the market cap in Bitcoin is back over $1 trillion now. Just that one little piece. So you know what? I think it's pretty clear that if the government were going to just get out of the way, then crypto would be the money, right? Crypto would be the new money. People would turn away because they see that the government, through inflation or other means, is constantly assaulting the dollar and, you know, other currencies from other central banks around the world. And people would go to crypto. It would be worth hundreds of thousands of dollars right now per Bitcoin. And Ethereum would be rapidly catching up to it. If only the government would get out of the way and stop making noise like it's going to destroy the crypto sphere and outlaw it, right? Of course, what's the reason for the government holdup? Of course, they say they might have to outlaw crypto, or they hint at it, because why? Well, it's the same reason they can't approve a spot price ETF, because they're protecting you, right? They're protecting you because they say that price manipulation might hurt people in the crypto space and destroy their investments, so that they have to protect you against price manipulation. Oh my God. Talk about infantilization, right? Let the people be responsible for themselves. This makes you think of Reagan, who, whatever his policies were and whatever his effect was, he talked a good game, right? He talked a good game in his great statement. The most terrifying words in the language are, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help." Yeah, well, that's what's going on in crypto right now. I mean, if they're protecting people right out of a chance to better themselves, why not protect people from starting a business? 25% of all new businesses fail in the United States. That's hurting their investment. Why not protect people from starting a new business? Jeez, come on. So yeah, the legacy institutions, the only thing hurting the crypto space. And I guess going forward, I would bet on crypto instead of the legacy institutions, right? What has the Catholic Church ever stopped? Catholic Church has got to be the world's worst money manager. They've had the same organization for 2,000 years, vastly outscaling anybody else, any single continuous thing. I mean, I know there's like some beer manufacturers and some hotels in Japan that have been operating for since the year 800 or so. But the Catholic Church has a farther reach. Catholic Church's culture took over the world at one point. It doesn't compare to a tiny business in Japan. And yet, what has the Catholic Church ever taken over? What have they been able to shut down? Western culture tried to shut down alcohol. That didn't work. Drugs, yeah, that's not going too well. So I guess I'm betting on the things that they're trying to shut down. So I'm still betting on current cryptocurrency. I still invest in it. And I do view it as an investment. Dollar cost averaging, go out and do it. Closing in on the last items here. Number eight, Brooklyn Bridge protests. The mainstream media really doesn't like to cover all the protests against vaccine mandates, against lockdowns. But there was a big one on the Brooklyn Bridge the other day. Thousands and thousands of people marching across the Brooklyn Bridge in protest of New York City's policies. So, you know what? Hey, let's do an E. Paul Torrance creativity quiz on bridges. Let's work on our fluency. If you haven't studied E. Paul Torrance and his creativity studies, go look at them. They're good. All right, number one question. Whose only long poem was The Bridge? Finished not long before he jumped into the Caribbean, killed himself. Yes, that was Hart Crane. Of course, we did Poetry Tuesday yesterday, and that was maybe an easy one, but here's a harder one. What did Hart Crane's dad invent? Hart Crane's dad invented lifesavers, if you're not aware of that. Sadly, he sold it before it was worth too much, before it got popular. All right, so the first question about bridges is who wrote the poem about the Brooklyn Bridge? The Bridge, his long poem, Hart Crane. Now let's do more bridge questions. Check out your bridge fluency. What poet wrote and what bridge is discussed in these lines? Earth has not anything to show more fair. Dull would he be of soul who could pass by a sight so touching in its majesty. Yep, obviously that was an easy one too. Wordsworth, lines composed upon Westminster Bridge, right around 1800. Another easy one there. Next, number three, what bridge connects Michigan's Upper Peninsula and Lower Peninsula? Yes, that's the Mackinac Bridge. Now you might be saying, hey, it's got a C at the end of it. Shouldn't it be Mackinac? No, it's the Mackinac Bridge. Mackinac with a W and Mackinac with a C are both pronounced the same. There you go. Number four, where is the Hell Gate Bridge? Love that name. Hell Gate Bridge, where is it? It's in the East River in New York City. It actually connects Ward's and Randall's Islands out to Queens, I guess. Great bridge, old railroad bridge. It's in my poem, New York Has Five Rains. Number five, according to Emily Dickinson, what bridge is peerless? Excellent pun from Emily right there. Peerless bridge is faith. Faith is the peerless bridge. Okay, there's your quick E. Paul Torrance bridge. Check on out your bridge fluency, how much you know about different bridges there. Quick note on Alec Baldwin. Now look, this is a tragic situation. Tragic situation. I'm just going to point out that this is hubris, right? This reminds you of Sharon Stone's husband. A lot of people forget this story. Sharon Stone's husband and Sharon Stone were getting a special tour of the LA Zoo about 20 years ago. Do you remember this? Probably not. And they were looking at the Komodo dragons, and they were going to go into the Komodo dragon enclosure, into the Komodo dragon habitat. Why do they get to go in there and I don't get to go in there? Because they're Sharon Stone, they're famous, and her husband. And so the people were like, okay, guys, yeah, come on in, come on in. And no, you got to take your socks off because the dragon's going to think that foot is a mouse, right? They eat the white mice. They're going to think that your foot is a mouse. Take your sock off. And Sharon Stone's husband said, nah. And they said, no, really, take your sock off. And he's like, nah, I'm cool, bro. And they're like, dude, you got to take your sock off. The dragon's going to think that your foot is a mouse. And Sharon Stone's husband was like, no, I'm good. I think I'm fine. And so he went in there, and Sharon went in there, and dragon ate off half of his foot. That's right. That's exactly what happened. The dragon chomped on that foot, tore off half of it. Guy needed surgery, and it's terrible that he thought that just I don't know what he was thinking. They warned him. They told him to take off his sock, or the dragon was going to think his foot was a mouse. Sure enough, dragon chomped on his foot. Komodo dragon, right? Komodo dragon out there chomped on guy's foot. He needed surgery. That's just, I guess he was thinking he was so special. He's used to such special treatment that he thought he would get it from the dragon too. Well, guess what? Dragon don't care. Dragon don't care. And you know what else doesn't care? A gun. A gun doesn't care. You know, if you're Alec Baldwin, or if you're on the set of a fancy movie, or if you can tweet and get 300,000 people to change what brand of peanut butter they're buying, the gun does not care, right? The gun is loaded or it's not, and it's going to do its damage or not. You have to take care. And I also just noticed that, you know, if this were a Gina Carano movie and this happened, or someone that the media disagreed with in their politics and this happened, the media would not be treating this situation at all the same way that they are treating it with Baldwin. It is not fair. If the media is trying to be fair, they are failing in this particular case. All right. Well, the last thing in the news here is Anthony Fauci lying to Congress, and I think we'll have to get to this again tomorrow. But just consider one thing, right? You've got the virology community, like Linfa Wang. He admitted in that Science interview, Science magazine interview, that the only reason he didn't point out that he knew about that that in that leaked DARPA proposal, the only reason he didn't point out what he knew that people like Daszak at North Carolina were trying to put furin cleavage sites into SARS-CoV-2s, he didn't point it out because he wasn't in outreach. That wasn't his sector of that project. So he didn't bother pointing out something critically important that he knew about the research on these viruses that have this virus that has ravaged the world for the last year and a half, or yeah, year and a half. So come on, that's just disingenuous. That's the reason why you didn't point that out, Mr. Wang, Dr. Wang, is that you weren't in outreach. Come on, come on. That's not the reason. Okay, the reason is you chose to. You chose not to bring it out. You could easily would have taken one email, Dr. Wang, one email to let everybody know, oh yeah, hey, by the way, back a couple of years ago, we did in fact try to put these cleavage sites in there. Oh goodness. Absolutely terrible. So anyway, yeah, Fauci came out, and even though he swore to Congress multiple times that they didn't finance gain of function research, it turns out last Friday that in this letter from National Institute of Health to Congressman Comer, I believe it is, and they say, yeah, actually, National Institute of Health now is saying, yeah, actually, this research did result in gain of function. They don't use those words. They just say, yes, it did make the virus more virulent. It did result in humanized mice becoming sicker from this virus than they would have from a virus that hadn't received this treatment. But you know what? It was an unexpected result. That's a quote, unexpected result. So we're really not to blame. Then Fauci comes out and says, well, I didn't lie because I didn't know about that unexpected result at the time. And then EcoHealth comes out and says, actually, we did turn in our reports on time and you did know about it. And you know what? That's it. That's the lack of respect for science. You wonder why people don't trust science anymore? That is, well, I shouldn't say they don't trust science. They absolutely do, right? 95% of all adults over 65 they have received at least one vaccine dose in the United States. So they're trusting science. They don't trust scientists, right? People are making some reasonable judgments. People are not getting enough credit for making the reasonable judgments that they are. Once again, scientists are different from science. That's going to be it for our news roundup here today, folks. Make sure that you subscribe. Make sure that you comment on Apple, on Spotify, wherever you are getting this podcast. I love to hear your feedback. And find me on Twitter, ADK Homeroom. Feel free to slide into my DMs if you like. Just at me. At me already. All right, folks. Take care.